Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, and Mike Murphy.
Did you see Trump last night? I mean it sincerely, the most lies told in a single debate. He lied about the great economy he created. He lied about the pandemic he botched. And then, his biggest lie, he lied about how he had nothing to do with the insurrection of January 6th. We all saw with our own eyes.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you.
We saw police being attacked, the Capitol being ransacked. He did not a single thing to stop it, nothing. Folks, I know I'm not a young man, but I know how to do this job. I know right from wrong. I know how to tell the truth. And I know, like millions of Americans know, when you get knocked down, you get back up. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
All right, Mike Murphy, there it is. That's called Break Glass Cleanup ad after.
It's a new spot, new advertising from the Biden people. A team of 80 people probably put that together to create the perception that there he is, sharp as a tack. I'm not sure I'm convinced. And I think to figure this out, we need to get one of the great
provocateurs. I call him provocateur. Yeah.
World traveler, food and wine expert, the nationally ranked ballroom dancer. He can do it all. Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Martin.
Hey, guys. Coming at you from Saddle Spring, Wyoming at the HF Bar Ranch. Hope you cowpokes are doing well.
This dude is always somewhere interesting. I want his life when I grow up. Jonathan Martin, he's a man about the world. But anyway, go ahead.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm thrilled to be here and hope the Wi-Fi is flowing through the Bighorn Mountains effectively.
So what's your lead there, Jurno? Where are we with President Biden, the debate of infamy?
The Democratic Party's in crisis. I mean, I think we're in extraordinary times politically. It's now July. The nomination for this party is next month. And the highest levels of the party, the elected officials, the donors, the strategists in the party are beside themselves with concern. Actually, it's not concern, it's panic. That their nominee is now irretrievably damaged, and that this is going to be a very difficult election, and that effectively American democracy is now teetering in large part because their incumbent president insisted on running again and serving into his mid-80s. And he showed the other night the gamble that clearly was. And so you've got this remarkable split screen, guys, where these members of Congress say one thing on television and on the record and something totally different in private. In private, they're appalled that Biden is doing this and that he's not reconsidering. And, at some point, the big question becomes, will those private comments become public, and will it take a real cratering in his polling for those folks to actually speak out loudly and clearly on the record?
You know, I have to say, just as a Republican insurgent living through the Trump era, sounds familiar to me that they're cowards in public and patriots in private. And I take a very dark pleasure that I trade away for this problem not being there, that a lot of the Dems who would always kind of look down on the cowardly R's, boy, they won't even tell the truth about what they really think. Well, here they are. Here they are, a little symmetry. Which is unfortunate.
There were a couple of D's who were more forthright. Jamie Raskin.
Yeah, true.
Let's listen to him, and then let's listen to Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
There are very honest and serious and rigorous conversations taking place at every level of our party.
Congressman Jamie Raskin saying there's a world where Biden is not the party's nominee, but Biden himself would have to choose to step aside.
Whether he's the candidate or someone else is the candidate, he is going to be the keynote speaker at our convention. He will be the figure that we rally around to move forward and beat the forces of authoritarianism and reaction in the country.
I think, like a lot of people, I was pretty horrified. Well, I think people want to make sure that this is a campaign that's ready to go and win, that the president and his team are being candid with us about his condition, that this was a real anomaly and not just the way he is these days.
So those guys, J-Mart, were more out front than others about these concerns, but
to their credit, by the way.
Yes. But everybody's phones are blowing up, you know, and there's great concern. What do you think the Biden reaction will be to all of this?
Well, the reaction so far has been a furious pushback at the staff level and trying to allay concerns and make the case that dumping Biden would create a larger mess, likely ensure that their VP is the nominee. And we'll talk more about that later. It's not remarkable that the White House spin in part is you wouldn't want the VP, she'd even worse. But that's obviously inherent in their case. That this is survivable, the country is so dug in, so polarized that Biden can still gut out a win. Guys, here's the problem. That's the case the White House staff is making. But where's Biden's case? It's now Tuesday. He's not done anything really in public except for brief remarks about the SCOTUS decision on Monday. He's not calling congressional leaders or governors to make the case or reassure them. He's missing an action 5 days later.
Yeah, one of the president's biggest weapons, any president, is the telephone. And there are 30 people he could call that would tamp this down if they could hear and listen to him. I thought the remarks that he made on the SCOTUS decision, which we're going to talk about later, Monday night, were quite sharp, but they were on prompter. And I, for one, am uncomfortable with the prompter operator running the country. He should have stayed for a few questions, but I don't know if he could have. That is the open question that, as you say, only he can resolve. Yet, you know, why wasn't he on 60 in a long interview with Leslie Stahl on Sunday night? Why haven't they set up a CNN town hall? And I'm coming to the conclusion, sadly, that he's incapable of that. They think it's too risky, which is the real story here. And by gaslighting everybody, they're making it worse. Now they're going to have all the bad public polls trickling out. So they think they have a panic now. Wait till it's pretty concrete. He's losing every swing state by better than the margin, and he's still semi-hidden other than the prompter. So, you know, their plane is losing altitude, not gaining it right now.
But the window here is small.
Right.
So delay is helpful to him if he wants to stay. I mean, the question he has to think about, obviously, is can he win? Can he still win? Was this just a bad 90 minutes in a long campaign? Or was it something that deeply embedded the fear that people already had about him? Because they're sort of asking people to discount what they saw with their own eyes. And what is the cost of continuing? They may believe that he has the best chance of anyone, but the question is, what is that chance? And how do you assess those risks?
What is ultimately Biden's answer to the question of why do you think the American voter should believe that you can serve 4.5 more years? It's not a 16-month lease on this car. He's asking for more years. And if you look at his comments and his imagery the other night, just think it's a very difficult case for Biden and his aides to make to the country that it's someone who can handle a crisis, the most difficult job in the world, for 4 more years.
Yeah, it's a marriage, not a date.
Yeah, exactly. In his speech the next day, he said very affirmatively off of the prompter, you know, I wouldn't be running if I didn't think I was prepared to serve, you know, 4 more years. And it sounded so discordant with what people had seen the night before. Nobody really believes that. And that's a problem. And it was telling to me that I was on the tube with Mitch Landrieu, who's a great guy who I really, really like and is doing his best for Biden. And he was on and he said something that the first lady said, which is, you know, we're not going to let 90 bad minutes erase 3.5 years of a great record. Well, You know, the thing is about these elections, we're not electing a president for the last 4 years. We're electing a president for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
And that is the problem. You know, setting aside the fact that I think he's done many great things, voters are not of that mind right now.
Totally. And, you know, the thing about 90 bad minutes, well, the clock is still running on bad minutes. If he can't take a press question, if he can't do candidate stuff and interact with people in front of television, the bad minute is not 90 bad minutes. It's going to be 90 bad days. And that means you lose.
Do you think he can still win the race?
I won't rule it out. And I still, in the next 48 hours, if he can come out and do some stuff, which doesn't involve a teleprompter, I think he can do a lot to help his own problem. I just don't think he has the toolbox. I hate to say that, but I'm waiting to see it, like most of the country. So if he can't, and he's a prisoner of the prompter, I think he can win. He could win, but I think he won't win.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely, but plausible, because A, he's running against Donald Trump, and B, because the country is so divided, and there's people who will literally vote for, a friggin' ham sandwich over Donald Trump. So he benefits from both of those things. I just think it's a lot harder now.
Best not to be a ham sandwich, though.
The challenge is, the challenge, as my God, is, like, you got to have someone make the case against Trump, and it's not clear that he can do that remotely effectively. And also, why is Trump going to give him a second debate?
He's not. He already said he isn't. And he said exactly, I think I may have said this on our show on Friday, our special on Friday, Mike, but he said exactly what I thought he would. He said, I wouldn't put Joe through that again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the whole Republican convention is going to be an ad for Pleasant Acres retirement home. You know, they're going to have doctors at the podium. It's going to be brutal. And if Biden can't get in front of that, I think it's bad. I mean, look, let me put it this way on the win or lose thing. I actually think at this point, Harris would be stronger than Biden. That doesn't mean I think Harris is a good candidate, should be the nominee, or can win. But I think she'd be marginally better than Biden in the condition I'm seeing him right now, unless they change that perception by putting him out there. But for me, it was a huge inside tell after his state of the Supreme Court reaction remarks, which were tight on prompter and fairly well delivered.
Yeah, they were.
He just wandered off. Well, didn't wander. He knew what he was doing. He turned and went away to the shouted press questions. That was a telling minute to me that, oh boy, he can't do it.
Last Friday, I got an unprompted call from a long-serving House Democrat, policy-oriented person who I don't think has a real relationship with Kamala Harris to speak of. And this person was in a total panic and didn't want to go on the record. But I said bluntly, all right, so your choices are Biden or Harris. You know, who would you prefer? And this congressperson said, I think at this point, a lot of us would say Kamala Harris. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because obviously so many congressional Democrats have been so down on the VP. The clear state of House Democrats last Friday, and I think still today. Yeah, I think some of them, maybe even the majority of them, would at this point prefer Kamala Harris to be their party nominee.
Well, let me posit a question to you wizards. We'll put on our amazing Kreskin tuxedos here, and we will look into the future. Do either of you think, we're recording this on Tuesday morning, as we often do, but I'll call it, a week from today or even a day or two before that, there will be a bunch of credible public polls out, I believe. Do you believe that Biden will be ahead Trump will be ahead outside the margin of error in the swing states, or will there be any state Biden is even narrowly ahead in of the big six states? I do not.
I don't either. J-Mart, you haven't voted here.
No, I think Trump is going to be ahead in every swing state. Bullet will be ahead by at least 3 points, if not more.
Yeah, so then we're really going to have the boiling cauldron, because it's being litigated, and the litigation is not helping drive those polls. And then there'll be proof that it's bad. And if Biden hasn't been out there and off a prompter doing some stuff, then, you know, the argument, I believe, and David, you're hearing from everybody, you're hearing from all your sources, JMR, they make is, it's a binary choice, Biden or Harris. I personally don't believe that, but we probably ought to talk process, right? About if the panic doubles because the polls are rendering a verdict, the American people are very unhappy with Biden, and the discussion is turned up. I mean, there's this DNC plot to try to rush it ahead, but they won't get that done by next week. So if things boil over next week,
that would look very bad. I think.
Agree. That's Soviet stuff.
One thing that's tied to the polling is the role of the biggest donors in the party. I think they're sort of co-mingled. I think if the polling does dip later this week, I think the contributors start to do the polling. I think that could create the sort of next turn.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we are treading water right now. But one thing that's interesting is the two groups that are fighting the hardest here are for Biden to continue are the Biden campaign, as they should, and the Trump campaign. I mean, Lara Trump was out there yesterday saying it would be an affront to democracy if they replaced Biden. And it's like, well, I'm glad you guys have gotten on this democracy train. It's a little late here, but that was, I thought, telling. I think it's an odd argument that, you know, you hear this is going around that the campaign, the Biden campaign is making that, well, if it's not me, it'll have to be Kamala. And if it's Kamala, she's, you know, worse off than me. I find that odd in a number of different ways. One is it's going to become more and more known that is the argument that they're making, and you're basically undercutting your running mate, and you know, that raises the question, well, you chose her, and secondly, it causes, you know, ill will with constituencies within the party. But it just seems like an odd,
yeah, and it's patronizing too. I mean, the subtext to it is, if you don't treat Kamala with kid gloves, the vital African American voting bloc will abandon Biden. I mean, what's she going to be, Trump's VP now? I think that's very patronizing toward Black voters. This is a good and a good versus evil race, and I think they understand it more than anybody. The stakes are high. So the idea that if Biden decides not to run, and there you can argue a lot of process methods of how it could be done, and it would be messy and democratic and exciting, and as that no, sorry, it's decided, it has to be this way. I don't buy it, and I think they're either deluding themselves, or they're treating Black voters and constituencies who care about Black voters as sort of a robotic, you know, organism that incapable of thought and decision. So I find the whole thing offensive.
At some point, doesn't the vice president, her husband, and her inner circle get a little tired of hearing the all but explicit case of, hey, Democrats, if it's not Joe Biden, guess what? You're not going to get
that's more insulting.
Regina Raimondo. You're going to get stuck with our crappy VP. I mean, that's really the case, and it's barely fake.
Well, I mean, the other problem with it is if people presume that Biden can't serve another 4 years, you're kind of making the point the Republicans want to make. You know, you're betting their argument. I honestly think she's the VP is of the two of them. She's made the case more effectively lately than he.
Made the case. I mean, it's now Tuesday. This debate was Thursday night. Since then, he's done a series of private fundraisers that we have cool reports of, but that's it. And then he gave a 4-minute, you know, epistle last night in the White House about the Supreme Court decision. There's nothing else scheduled.
Yeah, prompter. And he did a great Annie Leibovitz shoot. I understand he's got a velvet tuxedo that's killer.
Yeah, that was unfortunate timing that he repaired to Camp David after.
And the picture of the first lady.
To do a film shoot for Vogue. You know,
looks like a movie still for the Imelda Marcos story or something, you know, on the cover of Vogue. And, you know, I'll defend her. That's not who she is. But anyway, the whole thing, it's like we've gone into, it's turned into a pitch for a Zach Galifianakis movie where the White House prompter operator is running the country, you know, and Will Ferrell is the out-of-it president. I mean, the whole thing is like a dark dream.
the Jill Biden picture in Vogue, the Annie Leibovitz.
That's pissing
off younger people who are working for Joe Biden's keep. I've heard from some of them, and they're out there, traditional Democratic operatives, and they look at this and they say, who are the folks that we're working for? How tone deaf are they? Why is this happening? So there's real frustration, and it's not just the Biden books would have it. Pundits or the Beltway,
the podcasters, those insipid loudmouths on the interweb, you know, they're the problem.
Inside the house, it's their own campaign.
I was offended for you, Murphy, at that podcaster remark. That was totally untoward, and I'll defend you to the hilt. All right, I want you to know that.
Well, I'll tell one joke here. I can't and won't promise not to talk about it. But it's been published that there was a meeting between some of the Biden high command and a few of us on the Republican anti-Trump side in D.C. And I'll just say, when I made my remarks, it was a very respectful but very blunt meeting. You know, I said, I have 8 things I want to say. I'll say them quickly because at noon I'm due for a cover shoot on Bedwetting Podcaster Magazine. And to their credit, I got a good laugh out of them. But we're the problem.
Well, the bigger question is, how is the shoot? When is the magazine coming out? Annie shot Murphy.
Yeah, Annie
as
did
a
it. She was just, I borrowed Biden's velvet tuxedo, and I'm like rappelling like Tarzan on a big string of pearls into a soggy mattress. It's quite dramatic.
Okay, then let's take a break right here, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Hackaroos. Well, Axe is supposed to join me for this, but he's late to the ad recording session, and I'll bet dollars to donuts I know why. Yet again, he's taken a nap and overslept on his beloved Helix mattress. I mean, you've heard these ads we do. He is a fanatic for the Helix mattress, and I'll tell you who else is. My daughter. We got one of the kid Helix mattresses. It kind of fell off a truck in Chicago. Axe was involved in that with the Helix people. And we gave it to her, and she loves the darn thing because Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they have a great idea. They offer, get this, a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. I mean, everybody is unique, and everybody sleeps differently. That's why I look like a passed out drunken sailor all sprawled out. It's embarrassing. We all sleep differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for a specific sleep position and feel preference. You have models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure and relief if you sleep on your side, like I mostly do. You have models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Helix mattresses have enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. I mean, my wife has the only level 200 comforter in all of Los Angeles. We had to get a note from the governor of Alaska to allow it to even be shipped here. So a cooling mattress, and I'll bet a lot of the other dudes listening know about this, is really important, and Helix will do that. And finally, if your spine needs a little extra TLC, and many people do, including me, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers, so you get the best of both worlds on top. It's the perfect combination of comfort and support. So right now, you're in luck. Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows without political opinions. So it's 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. We're wired at Helix, and we want to help send the savings to you. So all you have to do is go to helixsleep.com/hacks. That's Helix, H-E-L-I-X, sleep.com/hacks. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Jamar, you got into a little hot water, or someone got into hot water, maybe not you, because you did a piece on Friday that said that Whitmer had told the Biden campaign that that Michigan was gone, and she went into major damage control.
Yes.
That was really interesting to me from a variety of standpoints. One is obviously that's a battleground state. That's a must-win state for him. If she actually said that, right, that should be a pretty significant warning.
Here's what happened, and this is why I think it's an interesting piece and why I wrote it. You can check it out at Politico. Whitmer on Friday night had a conversation with Jennifer O'Malley Dillon, who's the de facto Biden campaign manager. And the purpose of the call was that Whitmer wanted to disavow the draft Gretch chatter that was already, blazing by Friday night, and say that she doesn't like it. She doesn't like hearing about it. And she hates it. She's not bored with Biden here. She also wanted to convey that Michigan is going to be difficult now. And obviously that's clear to see. Here's where it gets interesting. That's what actually happened on the call, according to my reporting. I got over the weekend shot to me by a future potential rival of Governor Whitmer, a much different account, which was it was an SOS call that Michigan is gone, that Biden can't win here. And obviously that was shot because her future rivals are trying to damage her by portraying her as abandoning Biden in his hour right. of need.
Sounds right. like Pritzker to me, by the way. That's a Chicago move there.
What was interesting to me was that the knives are already out, and that potential opponents to Whitmer see her as a real threat and are already trying to sort of nick her up a little bit ahead of either 24 or 2028. So the kind of backstage blade work already going on in the Democratic Party, I think, speaks volumes about what this moment tells us about just the sort of sheer panic, and also the impulse to get the high ground, to find the best possible and safest position for yourself. And in Whitmer's case, of course, that was, trying to really push back hard against that plan to say, of course, I don't think Michigan is lost, Biden can still win here, because she doesn't want to be seen as, somebody who's throwing in the towel for Biden in this moment. So,
of course, the irony is, with a lot of respect for Whitmer, who I think would be the best choice to replace Biden of the usual suspects, I'm not sure she or many of the swing state governors could pass a polygraph saying right now they think Biden could win their state. I'd like to hear what Warnock thinks about Georgia, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course, but that's the case for all of these folks, Mike.
Yeah, but they have to. It's the posturing, and the others see her as a threat because she is an interesting gender story as president, which a lot of the white dudes who would like the job don't have.
The part of the appeal of her, I think, especially with the kind of big donor set, is that, hey, maybe it'd be easier to sneak her past customs in Chicago next month right. than it would be one of the white guys, because obviously, if we're going to bump Kamala Harris, better to do it with a woman. A bit of a crude assessment, but clearly that's part of the thinking. I wrote in my column, by the way, if you're Whitmer and Biden, does ultimately withdraw, she ought to make a run at this thing for this reason. I think she's better off running this year than she is in 28, because there's going to be less competition. And frankly, by 28, Whitmer runs the risk of being yesterday's news.
Yeah. Listen, one of the things that probably recommends her is that she's not a coastal candidate, and she speaks in a language and an idiom that regular people get. And she displayed that in her tweet in response to your story, J-Mart, which was, anyone who claims I would say that we can't win Michigan is full of shit. Let's go.
Yeah, that's Detroit talk there, or in her case, really Lansing talk. Yeah, here's a little tidbit, J-Mart, just quickly, that'll sound like your life. I got a call yesterday from a high-ranking advisor to one of the others, basically saying, how far out on this Biden limb do you think we ought to go defending him right now? Which is interesting, because they're trying to figure out how to trim their sails a little, because they don't want to look like an idiot as the days click by where you don't see Biden in public.
Everybody is trying to figure out where they should be, what to say, how to say it. And they're like, ducks furiously treading underwater while trying to appeal placid on the surface, right?
I think there's another thing. Part of it is respect and affection for Biden. And part of it is giving him some room to make a decision, because Joe Biden is a proud, proud guy. And he doesn't want to, he's not going to let anybody push him anywhere. He is also a guy, I think, who cares about the country. I don't think he wants to be the guy. His legacy right now is he's the guy who beat Donald Trump and routed him from the White House and accomplished a lot of great things in the years after. His legacy, if he continues and loses, is going to be different. And, you know, he needs to consider that. But I think that a lot of people want to give him room and give themselves room to figure this out. And there are two elements to it. One is, what is the risk of changing as opposed compared to the risk of staying? Secondly, what is the process by which you would replace him? And, you know, that is some improvised process is going to have to take place, in which there is some ability for potential candidates to present themselves to the American people in a truncated way. This has always been the problem that concerned me, that if Biden were to be forced to decide late that he couldn't make a go, that he would deprive the party of a primary process, which is how you vet candidates. You know, look at President DeSantis.
Right, and get buy-in.
You know, I mean, this is how you find that you pressure test them, you vet them. This is how we learn about candidates, through primary processes. The question is there any way to at least simulate that in a warp speed fashion in 5 weeks or four, you know, soon to be 4 weeks? And that is, you know, that's not an inconsequential question, but it's definitely one people are thinking about.
Yeah, I think there's a fork in the road. You either open it up and have some sort of primary among the delegates, or Biden tries to buffalo somebody strong through with a surge in public support, which I kind of favor that, being essentially anti-democratic, I guess, in my right-wing heart, because I worry about what a modern democratic contest would look like among the universe of delegates, because it'll be a circus. But, you know, David, as you said before, and I totally agree, the whole thing is a risk burger. But with Biden, if Biden becomes untenable, you kind of have to pick your scary route.
Well, that's why people are waiting on these polls.
Yeah.
You know, the problem, J-Mart, that worries me, and I say this respectfully, because, you know, I do think that Biden has done great things, and I think that the experience that he brings is meaningful, and most meaningful is he's a guy who actually believes in rules and norms and laws and institutions and believes in the fundamental tenets of democracy. And you can't say that about Donald Trump. All of that is true. But I think people are waiting to see these polls and see just how lasting the damage is. But also, there's no assurance that this won't happen again. I guess the only way you assure that is to keep him on a prompter 24/7.
And then the prompter becomes the candidate, which is deadly too. I mean, I think one of the biggest threats in all this, if they can't show Biden and undo it, is, and we've talked forever about it, one of the best messages that Biden has is, I'm for you, the working middle class. He's for himself. But if Biden is a 81-year-old clinging to power for no good reason, then it's about him, and that all goes away, and it's just a pair of egomaniacs, the better one and the worse one. And that is not the campaign you want to have.
Speaking of pressure testing, I think what you're seeing implicit in some of these comments, especially for folks like Sheldon Whitehouse, is, I see it, Joe. Let's see it. If this was come off, if it was an anomaly, get out there. Do a live interview, do a town hall. And I think, speaking of pressure testing, maybe that's how this is resolved, is that Biden does have to go off the prompter. He's got to put it out there. And, you know, in some ways, you know, if he can survive.
Yeah, sink or swim.
If he can give the checkers speech effectively and show that he can sort of push back, then maybe he can save himself. But if not, then that could make this easier on Democrats. If he obviously doesn't have the capacity, then maybe it's easier to get him to drop out. I do think, Mike, that if he can't go forward, I'm sure he'd try to save face by ensuring Kamala Harris is the nominee. He'd want to have some imprint on the nomination, right?
Why does his imprint on the nomination have to be her?
Well, because she's his vice president, he picked her. It's his legacy, effectively.
I don't know. Well, I think he could say it's time. I promised a bridge to the future, and the Biden-Harris team has done that. It's time for a new team.
I'm not sure that he should be stepping away and putting his finger on the scale. If there's a process, she may emerge from that process. Like I said, she actually has been, you know, she has been tested the last 3.5 years, and she hasn't always passed that test, but she's grown. There's no doubt she's grown as a performer. I wouldn't discount the fact that there's a process, and she does pretty well in that process. But here's the thing I was going to get to. There is no, you know, first of all, time is wasting. So, you know, for him to go out and prove that what the people saw wasn't the norm, you know, there's just a very short runway here. Secondly, as I think I said just a few minutes ago, there's, you know, if there is this fear that it comes and goes, that what they saw comes and goes, and that it will display itself again between now and November. But listen, guys, look at his schedule this week.
Yeah.
Lack of schedule.
Right. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but it is very, very light. And this was a week that probably demanded a very heavy schedule if you wanted to reassure people that you're up to it. And as Mike says, a schedule that, you know, I mean, he's now, he did a couple of fundraisers, and he now reads remarks off of prompter at the fundraisers.
Yeah, which is a terrible tell, and they all talk about it.
It doesn't take questions.
Well, he's been doing that for months now.
Yes.
I talked to somebody in Chicago 2-3 months ago who had seen him previously to that by 2 or 3 months. And I got this extraordinary account of, did you know that even in private homes, Biden's reading from a prompter? So that's been going on for a while now, guys.
Right.
Yeah. No, so, I've been hearing about it. You have, Axe has. It's been, they've got him in a prompter bubble. He is a prisoner of the prompter right now. And I don't think that's sustainable after the debate.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Okay, let's face it. After a night with drinks, I don't exactly bounce back now in my dotage the way I once did the next day. I'm still feeling it. I have to make a choice. I can either have another great night or a great next day. That choice was forced upon me until I found ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink, say that 3 times, is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists. We're not talking about somebody in their garage, okay? These are science pros, and they invented it to tackle rough mornings after a little bit of drinking. And again, always drink responsibly. So here's how it works. When you drink alcohol, this stuff in the happy juice, gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not so much dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember, here's the key, make ZBiotics your very first drink of the night. Drink responsibly. Don't overdo it. And then you will feel a lot better tomorrow. Look, I won't lie. I was a bit on the fence about ZBiotics initially. So we took human guinea pig Hannah and human guinea pig senior advisor Axelrod, and let's just say we did a little experiment in the dives and bars of Chicago, and I can tell you it worked. We get listener emails about this all the time. They say they really like it. So give it a try. Find out. You're going to need it for vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. Oh my, there's so much going on right now. We got busy summer. Beverages are involved. So give it a try. All you got to do is go to ZBiotics. That's Z like zebra, BIOTICS, biotics, ZBiotics.com/hacks. And you will get 15% off your first order when you use Hacks at checkout. So look at it this way. You save a little money, you give it a try, and with the savings, you can buy a beer. It's like a perfect closed loop. ZBiotics is back with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they will refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/hacks and use the magic code HACKS. You go to ZBiotics.com/hacks, use the code HACKS at checkout for that 15% off. And thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and all of our good times.
I think, Mike, what you're saying is right in that, you know, if you want to reassure people, you got to flood the zone and do a bunch of interviews and go out and do a bunch of things that where you are speaking extemporaneously, where you're handling questions and responding to questions. The fact that he's not, the fact that he's not making calls, that's a big concern.
Yeah, well, it's a huge tell because you don't have to be the greatest political strategist in the world the morning after that debate to say, book him for an hour with Leslie Saul on 60 or something equivalent, or CNN, something big. And they didn't do it. It wasn't like they hadn't thought of it, I'm sure. It's that they didn't have confidence he could do that, which is the real story here, which is why we're in this situation.
Hey, guys, can we just talk real fast about what other Democrats are saying and doing? Because to me, it's such a reveal of where their heads are. And you guys have worked in politics long enough that you can decode some of these euphemisms and some of these phrases that say more than they actually may seem on face value. The one that got me was Andy Beshear, who on Monday, he's the governor of Kentucky, on Monday, he was talking to reporters, and he said two things about Biden. He said, well, only he can make that decision. And then he also said that he was for Biden as long as Biden is the nominee. I mean, you know, when you say those two things, it sends a blazing message, right?
It is.
Right. And that's pretty common. I heard Debbie Dingell, who's nothing if not, a strong party Democrat, saying essentially the same thing, you know, saying, you know, Biden's been a great president and, you know, as long as he's running, I'm for him, you know, and in a choice between him and Trump, it's not even close. But there was this sort of ambiguity, and a lot of folks are now worried as much about the chances of winning the House and holding down Senate gains for Republicans than they are about the presidential race.
Totally. I mean, if you open your window, you can hear the screams coming across the country from those poor down ballot people who are in tough races already. The testers, you know, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, though he's an exceptionally
Sherrod Brown,
et cetera, et cetera. And that dam may break soon when the polls start to bubble up in the next few days and somebody's going to say something.
We all thought that the famous ad that down ballot candidates to run when they know that the top of the ticket's going to lose. And you guys have probably written this ad over the years, which is, I'll be a check on President X. And President X is the president of the other party. We all thought that that spot was going to run in September in some of these states or districts. Hell, you can see that I'm going to be a check on Trump ad this summer now, right?
Right. And then with they bring Biden in the state, you get the incredible galaxy of creative excuses. My favorite being dental emergency. Wanted to be there, but the senator had a dental emergency.
Sock drawer rearrangement, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I've heard from people saying, you know, I can't go out there. I'll do what I have to do, but I'm not going to go out there with the same level of investment and enthusiasm and because I'm
trying to live here.
I'm worried. But let me ask you guys one last question before we hit the mailbag. The Supreme Court made an extraordinary decision yesterday that essentially does provide immunity for the president to do all told things that are really sort of mind-boggling if they're in execution of his official duties, which will now forever be a source of contention, whether something was a public duty
and litigation.
But to a guy like Donald Trump, it's like, go to town, brother. If you make it, go. He's done. If nothing else, he's shown that he can expand the parameters of laws beyond recognition. There is these fears of Trump and Trump Trump autocratic practices and vengeance and retribution and, you know, going after his political enemies, jailing his opponents and so on. I mean, that seems a little less hyperbolic today than it did yesterday.
No, it puts an edge on the knife, no doubt about it. Now, I will say it looked to me like a cynical punt by the Supreme Court, because they didn't open it up for all future. They just said, well, let's take a pause, which lets Trump off the hook, and go fight about what down courts, and then probably back up again about what federal actions are. But it, in effect, puts a very cheap padlock on the gate containing a second Trump presidency, which is an extremely troubling thing. And that should be a political weapon for the D's, assuming that debate can ever move back to Trump and not on does Biden, is he able to carry on a conversation about a serious issue?
Which is why he was out there last night, of course. But
right. Without a conversation, though, without a two-way press conversation, just reading the prompter.
By the way, I have a terrible cold.
Well, that's explaining your performance here.
I'm sitting under, it was from sitting under a rainstorm on the set at in Atlanta, the CNN set. There was a hole in the roof over my chair. So I just want to explain my raspy voice here. I actually do have a cold, and it explains everything.
People are starting to tweet, we need a change.
Well, I think the other thing that this court decision does is it emboldens not just Trump, but it emboldens the people who Trump's going to surround himself with in his press next year. And that's always been the risk of Trump, is people taking his impulses and actually putting them into action. It's like the opposite of, you know, Nixon and his high command, which kind of like rolled their eyes and ignored him at the end. It's the risk that like the opposite would happen, and Trump would have people who would very much be thrilled to carry out some of his knee-jerk impulses, and now they're going to feel like they have legal cover to do it.
Or looking for an excuse to carry him out, even if it isn't Trump's real influence, and, you know, just a hint, and then they can go off on their evil fantasies.
So the Biden campaign theory has always been that people would focus on this and on the extraordinary risks of an unfettered, unchained Trump during the final stretches of this campaign, and they would, whatever their concerns about Biden, they would choose him. Do you think that is still valid? And I asked in light of the Supreme Court decision, will people say, "Yeah, he's old. I don't know that he can make it, but he's not going to turn this into, you know, Viktor Orban's Hungary or worse."
No. I wish. I think it's a single. Dobbs is bigger. That's the court issue. And now there's no issue but Biden until he resolves this one way or the other, in my view.
There's been this sort of a journalistic lecturing going on for the last year that the press to be covering the stakes, not the odds, right? That's sort of the ivory tower. How dare you horse race hacks cover the odds here? But that's precisely why Biden's debacle of the debate matters so much. It's not because of the odds. It is because of the stake, because Biden has now made it much more likely that Trump is going to thrust this country into a constitutional crisis if he's president again. And that's why so many Democrats believe that it's profoundly selfish and irresponsible of Biden to go forward.
By the way, horse race hack, I think, ought to be your new moniker. That's exceptional.
You can put on my hat right now.
Let's stop for a minute and listen to a word from one of our fine sponsors. You know, we're living in a time, hackaroos, of all kinds of threats to our happiness, be it dumb politics, threats to democracy, stupidity in general, people who cheat at four-way stop signs, and lousy quality blinds. I mean, nothing drives me crazier. Blinds are a genius idea. Somebody invented them. They can let light in or out, shade. They're fantastic. So why do it poorly? Why do it on the cheap? Why take a great idea and besmirch it with horrible, cheap execution? Well, I'm happy to tell you, there's a better way to buy blinds and window treatments, and it's called 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the United States. And right now, get this, you're in luck. They're running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Now, look, we can shop for almost anything at home. So why not shop for blinds at home, too? It's easy, fast, convenient. 3-Day Blinds has local, professionally trained design consultants who have an average of 10 years plus experience in the blinds game, which is not for people who don't know their way around. So what you can do is get in touch with one of these experts with all that experience and get guidance, expert guidance, on the right blinds for you in the comfort of your own home. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the very same day. Now, look, let's Axelrod isn't here today, but let's just say he's no genius with a screwdriver. Don't worry if you're like that. The expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, which is tricky and important, and install with craftsmanship so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. So if you could use some new blinds, and let's face it, most of us could, maybe they're letting in too much light, maybe they're drooping a bit. You don't want the neighbors talking about this. They can see from the outside. But you know how to solve your problem. Just go to 3-Day Blinds. They've been in the business for over 45 years, okay? They know what they're doing, and you may not hear it in the name, but they make an incredibly high-quality product, and they make it fast, hence the name 3-Day Blinds. Look, don't just take my word for it. I'm in politics. You can look them up. They are the highest-rated blinds company on Trustpilot at a 4.7 out of 5 stars. If you round that up, that's 5 stars, but call it 4.7. So what do? Real simple. You go to 3-Day Blinds. To buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and even drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation, you can pass consultation. Just head to 3dayblinds.com/hacks. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/hacks. Now, it's the number 3. Then day, D-A-Y, blinds, BLINDS.com/hex. One more time, 3DAYblinds.com/hex. Check it out. You'll thank me. Your neighbors will thank me. Get your blinds right. If you have a question for the mailbag, we have given you a cornucopia of ways to contact us. First, for you old schoolers, Mr. President, you just email us at hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com, or you can record a voice memo, a quick one. We're the bloviators on your phone, and email that to us. Use your name so we know who you are. Or finally, in the back of a Cook County Democratic Turnout Center, where I've been enrolled to vote for several decades, you can call our machine and leave a message. Again, keep it 20, 25 seconds with your question and give us your name. That number, 773-389-4471. I'll repeat it because who can remember that? 773-389-4471. We want to hear from you. And extra points if you do it as a song.
So, J-Mart, we have a question here from a person appropriately named. When you hear the question, you'll know why. Banksy. All right, let's hear from Banksy.
Hello there. This is Banksy, fan of the show. What happens if Biden and Harris step aside to the $100 million-plus dollars that Biden has raised? What happens to that war chest? I was understanding it could only be used if Harris decides to take over as the candidate. Thank you.
So party money, the money that has been given to the DNC, could be used for whoever the nominee is. Where it gets more complicated is the folks who have cut a check to Biden's reelection itself. Now, with that money, it can be transferred, as I understand it, to, you know, a super PAC that already exists or could be created. But of course, the super PAC can't be, used to coordinate with the campaign. I suppose Biden could also transfer his individual contributions to the DNC, and the DNC could just have a larger war chest to spend as well.
Let me say, my view of this is that if there is another candidate, there's likely to be a big outpouring of funding. I think people are so intent on beating Donald Trump that I don't think money is going to be the obstacle. It's a valid question. I think a lot of that money could find its way to the candidate. The campaign said, well, the vice president would control that money, but I think that's in keeping with their message that she would have to be the nominee. But
Yeah, it's a non-issue. It's the internet fundraising world. If you had a Whitmer, Booker, they would explode.
Well, and I think big donors too, Mike. I think I've heard from a lot of big donors who said, look, we'll, you know, if there's another candidate, they should know we're going to be there for them. So I think you're going
to
hear a lot.
And by the way,
you
can refund the money. You can send the donor money back, and the donor can give to the new entity. This is, in my view, a huge non-issue. All right, for Axe, this is from Steven. Why hasn't anyone, all caps, from the Biden team been fired after the debate? Not one person. We would all feel better, and it would definitely help, says Steven. Axe, what do you say?
I say that I've worked with Ron Klain on a series of debates over the years. I've worked with Anita Dunn and Bob Bauer. These are the people who've been identified in press reports as being in the crosshairs of the Biden family because of the debate. I don't know what went on in that debate. I know these folks, though, and they're very, very professional. I don't think they instructed the president to look slack-jawed during his reaction shots.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was the Trump debate team's advice.
I don't think this struck me as fundamentally a user error problem. I'm sure that the issue was not the strategy that was urged and practiced. He did have a bad night, and I don't know. It's always people don't like to blame the candidate, and so the first instinct is to blame the staff. Now, the one question you have to ask yourself in retrospect is: was it wise to debate at all?
Right. That's the mega question.
I mean, from a strategic standpoint, they set this up to be essentially an oral exam to show America that Biden was up to it, and he flunked the exam. And so, knowing what they knew, and they must know more about, Biden than anyone else, were there reasons to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't? Mike, for months, I was urging on this podcast that they delay on making a debate decision and only do it if they needed to break glass. And they made that decision pretty early.
And they did it out of weakness, David. I mean, they did it because they had to change the trajectory of the race that was getting out of hand.
Well, that's the thing. They may have decided they had to break the glass early.
Which made sense. I mean, if you have a candidate and you're up against Trump, that made sense. But I have a crazy theory on this. The staff has to know the Biden they have. They're the ones who said no Super Bowl softball interview, which was strange. They're the ones who haven't done a press conference forever. So all of a sudden he does a preemptive debate. I think it wasn't the staff. I don't think they would have been for this. I think it was the president and the first lady. I think the tough old Irish bird said, get me a debate. I'm going to teach that orange son of a bitch a lesson or two. And the first lady, who we know is a enthusiastic proponent of a Biden campaign, says, do it. And nobody in the staff could stop it, which is another question about the staff. I heard somebody, it might have been Tim Miller, I think it was Tom Nichols actually made a good point. It looks like the White House runs like a Senate operation where you don't have advisors, you have staff implementing. And so that's my conspiracy theory of how such a horrible debate happened. Because I tweeted I was for it early because they must have a good Biden and they can reset. And if not, we're all going to see and it's before the convention and something can happen. And unfortunately, it's outcome number two.
There's a hybrid theory to that, which is both and. The White House staff didn't have a huge appetite to debate. Biden wanted to debate, said on live radio with Howard Stern that he was going to debate, and the Biden folks wanted to make the best of it, and they're watching this trial in New York. It's not getting any traction at all, and the Biden folks said, the old man wants to bring in debate. We have no choice. How can we leverage this the best possible way? Here's an idea. Let's preemptively come out and say we'll do it early in June, and we'll try to change the nature of this race, and we'll satisfy Biden because we're doing the debate that he wants, and hopefully if it works out, we can change the course of the race. That's my sense.
Yeah. So Mike, Kim has an interesting question for you. If Biden dropped out, and she put in parentheses, and that's a big if, which is right, could the party prevent fracture by instituting ranked choice voting amongst the delegates to select a nominee? All candidates can throw their hat in the ring and through a series of rounds use ranked choice voting. A selection would emerge. Additionally, in the event Kamala Harris does not win out, could the party stipulate that she would remain on the ticket as VP to prevent an exodus of African-American voters? It's a pretty thoughtful question.
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Kim. And I think you're right. I think if they do go the convention route, and Carville's got an idea, they pre-select four. So it's a multiple choice, not an essay. But the idea of ranked choice voting, which, you know, I'm for and support, If that was involved, what it really does is incentivize candidates to have a wider appeal. It makes you care a lot about who's voting for you, but also being a lot of people's second choice, which generally makes you widen your message. So I think that would actually be, you know, the process and the fight on the convention floor could be something. But I think that is an excellent idea because it would create buy-in. I think you should immediately telegram that to Jamie Harrison. Now, on the second part, in the event Kamala Harris does not win out, could they stipulate? I would be against stipulating. If you're going this way with a wide coalition rank choice kind of structure, I would let that be the story all the way across. I would get out of the stipulation business because that's the opposite of this spirit of ranked choice voting. But I think if, you know, I'm an old political boss kind of mentality. I'd rather grab Whitmer, organize it, go public, create a huge polling surge and whip through the convention because conventions are risky. But there's a good argument for buy-in that a mini primary happen. And I think ranked choice in the convention would be an excellent way to actually conduct the balloting in the world where this would happen, which is still a stretch, but another week and some really bad polls. And, I don't think we're going to throw this question out. It may become relevant for real.
J-Mart, you know, I've heard James Carville talk about this. And I guess my question is, how and who arrives at the final four?
Well, clearly we do, David. The hacks, we take control of the situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like the college basketball tournament where they have the play-in game in Dayton. And that could be effectively the hacks on Capitol. Exactly. I think the idea of having kind of try out the first night of the convention makes a lot of sense. But yeah, how do you winnow it down to 5 to 6? That's the real challenge. You can't do it with money or polling, I don't think. So, you know, what's the metric by which you do that? Which is why I come back to, I'm not advocating for that. I just think it's the most realistic scenario. If Biden is, his hand is forced, I think he would try to secure the way for Kamala Harris as the best possible face-saving thing he could do. That's my sense.
Oh, out of the frying pan into the fire.
It's going to be an interesting few days. And guys, let's not lose sight of the fact that we are in the midst of all of this. We're going to celebrate the nation's birthday on July 4th. And I think now more than ever, let's take a moment to appreciate what America means and what we need to do as citizens to perpetuate and strengthen and hand to our kids that great project of democracy.
Here, here.
Yeah, which doesn't happen by itself. It's based on citizens doing their job. So we're being here.
Democracy is not a spectator sport, as
that's
the late,
right,
great John Warner once used to like to say.
All right. Well, J-Mart, thank you. Enjoy Wyoming there. Go on the Malcolm Wallop Senate drive.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all.
Thank you. And David, we'll talk soon.
Talk soon.
The Wallop Senate drive begins here. Three riders with a proclamation.
Come join the Wallop Senate drive. The Wallop Senate drive. It's alert and it's alive and it's Wyoming to the spur. The Wallop Senate drive.
Go forth for Wyoming, Malcolm Wallop. Tell them in the United States Senate that the people of Wyoming are proud of their land and life, and that a Wyoming senator will fight every intrusion upon it. That you, Malcolm Wallop, will serve the nation best by serving Wyoming first, the very special needs of this great state, and by so doing, share its blessing with America.
Come join the Wallop Senate. Senate drive. The Wallop Senate drive.
Malcolm Wallop for United States Senate. Ride with us, Wyoming.